evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, November 3rd, 2014. Dozens of South Sudanese are wounded in a bombing raid in Raja County.
The plane called the Arsenal came to Raja about at 2 on Sunday, showering inside Raja, and it went to a place called Koshamam.
And rebels of the SPLM in opposition say South Sudan Army is attacking their positions from different directions in Upper Nile State.
The fighting started in the morning, and of course it was accompanied by shelling of our positions at the canal, at the mouth of Janglei Canal.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
An official in Raja County in western Bahr al-Ghazal state says dozens of people were wounded in a bombing raid yesterday on a village near the border with Sudan. Local officials are accusing the government in Khartoum of being behind the attack. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Hassan Jalab is the commissioner of Raja County. He says the attack took place in the middle of the day.
The plane called the Arsenal came to Raja about at 2 on Sunday, towering inside Raja, and it went to a place called Koshamam.
Jalab says 24 people, including women and children, were wounded in the attack, but no one was killed. The bombing destroyed Samam Basic School, he says. The wounded were in their homes when the attack occurred. Jalab says he is unsure what the Antonov was targeting in the attack. Turkey's Anadolu News Agency meanwhile quoted a local source who says 35 people were killed during the bombing. It has not been possible to confirm that there were deaths in the bombing raid. Jalab says local people suspect Sudan is behind the attack.
We don't know exactly which plane came from, but always we used to bombard from the north.
SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says a team of investigators have been sent to Raja.
The SPLA command is studying to know exactly whose plane that bombed the village and wounded innocent people. The plane came from the direction of Sudan.
Raja County borders the troubled Sudanese region of Darfur. It has been one of the targets of numerous aerial bombardments since South Sudan gained independence in 2011. The attacks worsened in 2012 when South Sudan shut down oil production because of a dispute with Sudan over oil transit fees. Khartoum, meanwhile, has accused South Sudan of harboring militias that are fighting its government. South Sudan denies the allegations. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu from Juba.
Sudan's information minister says the government of South Sudan is giving refuge to Darfur rebels who are fighting the government of Sudan. But he denies that Sudan was behind the bombing that happened in Raja last night. Ahmed Bilal tells VOA fellow Nabil Biajo that the bombing of Khorshamam was likely another episode of the ongoing fighting between the government of South Sudan and rebel forces loyal to Dr. Riek Machar.
Actually, these rebels coming from the south. They have got their ammunition, weapons, everything coming from the south, and they are located in the south. That's why maybe the pursuit or something like that is happening, but I'm not sure. I have no idea.
Raja is very close to Darfur, and the Sudanese rebels are based in Darfur, and they easily can find refuge in Raja. Observers say that's why Khartoum was bombing Raja last night.
I don't agree with that. In fact, if there is some sort of protest, it should be from our side. Why they are giving them shelter there in the south? Why they have got the location from the south and then they come in Sudan? If this story is correct, that the rebels, they come from Khorshamam and then they went back to Raja or something like that, why should they give them shelter? Why?
So is it true that your government is pursuing the Darfur rebels, the Justin and
Quality? I'm not sure. Let me, Nabil, make sure about what is happening from our military spokesman, and after that I can give you an answer.
How do these like reports affect the relationships between your government, the government of Sudan, and the government of South Sudan when these accusations
I'm
are being traded?
Strongly we say that our relations with the South should not be subjected to minor things which happen now and then.
And as Mr. Kiir, President Kiir, is scheduled to visit Sudan soon, in the coming day or two, do you think these reports might affect or complicate things?
No, I don't think. I don't think it will complicate things. And if this happened, I'm not sure about it, first of all. If this happened, this visit will also come on to calm these things and to solve it in the future.
That's Sudan's Information Minister Ahmed Bilal speaking to VOA fellow Nabil Biagio from Khartoum earlier today.
The government of South Sudan and rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar are swapping accusations over who started a new round of fighting in Upper Nile State. The clashes erupted in the village of Doileb near the Sobat River, which separates Upper Nile and Jonglei States. VOA fellow Michael Atit has this report on the fighting. It was prepared by my colleague Charlton Doki in Juba.
SPLA and local officials say fighting started in Doleb yesterday and lasted until this morning. SPLA spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer blames opposition forces for starting the clashes.
The rebels attack SPLA using artillery and crossing the river, but the SPLA repulsed them and the SPLA is pursuing them. They are being pursued into Korfluz and Canal area in PG County.
But the military spokesman for the rebels, Lul Rai Kwang, says government forces are to be blamed for the unrest. He says the SPLA teamed up with local militias and
started moving towards our positions south of Sobat River. And in the morning, these two groups launched coordinated attacks on our positions. The fighting started in the morning. And of course, it was accompanied by shelling of our positions at the canal, at the mouth of Jonglei Canal.
Doleb is around 20 kilometers south of Upper Nile State capital, Malakal. Upper Nile Information Minister Peter Holt says the town has not been affected by the fighting.
There are a lot of SCLA troops deployed in that particular location. So even the civilians are very confident, are still doing their normal business. There's no problem around Malakal town.
The new round of clashes comes as the long-running and slow-moving peace talks led by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, or IGAD, are poised to resume in Ethiopia. Kong says this is not the first time that the government has resumed hostilities just before the round peace talks.
It has become a tradition of the government troops, whenever we are resuming peace talks, they would go on the offensive, try to get more territories from us to strengthen the position of the negotiators at peace talks. This is what they have been doing each time we are having peace talks going on.
Aguer says the SPLA is not trying to sideline the peace process and insists the rebels are responsible for the latest violence in Upper Nile.
The more they attack, the more they are fighting. SPLA is only fighting in self-defense, and we are still committed to the ceasefire.
The International Crisis Group warned in a report released last week that with the rainy season drawing to close this month, both sides in South Sudan's 11-month-old conflict are planning to launch a major offensive. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
Opposition forces have renewed demands that the Ugandan forces withdraw from South Sudan if the country is to have a meaningful peace agreement. But the government insists it will not withdraw the Ugandan soldiers. South Sudanese Defense Minister Kwol Manyang insists his government has the right to have military cooperation with their southern neighbors.
It is up to them. If they don't want to stop the war because of the UPDF, UPDF came on an invitation from the government of South Sudan. And it is legal because because we have an agreement, whenever there is disturbance in a country, then the country has a right to invite another country. This is the AU, is there in the AU charter.
Manyang says the opposition should not use the Ugandan soldiers as an excuse to violate the ceasefire agreements. Opposition spokesperson Lul Roy Kong insists the demand is for the benefit of both sides.
We do not want that to be an obstacle, of course, but we renew this call because we have a feeling that the withdrawal of Ugandans is going to speed up the process, the peace process itself. The presence of Ugandans here had been an obstacle to the overall process. The presence of Ugandans made SPLA bolder. It made them have a feeling of the big brother attitude, that we have a big brother here that is capable of protecting us.
Manyang says the agreement has been in existence even before the December conflict. The Uganda People's Defense Forces, or UPDF, have been fighting along with the SPLA forces in Yambio against Uganda's Lord's Resistance Army rebels of Joseph Kony. Manyang also argues that the instability in South Sudan could spread across borders and have an impact on Uganda. The UN says more than 200,000 South Sudanese have fled to their neighbors, mainly Uganda and Ethiopia.
Uganda has a moral right to be in South Sudan, to see that war is not a solution to problems. And in fact, Juba is now peaceful because Uganda, UPDF, is here.
Kong says the government does not see the point of reaching a peaceful agreement because they believe they have an upper hand in terms of military affairs, due in large part to the presence of the Ugandan forces.
This has been a demand that is overdue, but of course, you know, the government in Juba does not want that because it is the government, it is the Ugandan force that is protecting the government in Juba. It is the Ugandan force that is protecting other vital installations. So they do not want Ugandans to go because they have a feeling they would be vulnerable. And this is where the problem lies. But to us, the role of Ugandans is a very negative role. They have no reason to come and meddle in our internal affairs.
The South Sudan government insists the Ugandan army is in Juba to guard the key installations such as the airport. The Ugandans have been fighting alongside the SPLA in other parts such as Bor.
From Uganda, we now shift gears and move to Kenya. UN officials say 8 people were killed over the weekend and scored injured in fighting between different refugee groups in Kakuma camp in northwestern Kenya. Emmanuel Nyabera, the spokesman for the UN Refugee Agency in Kenya, says the violence erupted when a South Sudanese taxi driver knocked over a child from Great Lakes community. Nyabera says refugees from Rwanda and Burundi reacted by attacking refugees from South Sudan. He says Kenyan police managed to restore calm in the camp, but tensions remain high.
The conflicts or the tensions started on the 26th of last month when there's an incident where there's an assault by one of the refugee children were assaulted. And this developed into a very uncomfortable situation where different communities started fighting against each other, and the government authorities intervened. And for a while, security was maintained and some sort of calm was restored. But then later on again, things changed and the conflict continued over the weekend. And now, like I said, around 8 people so far by this morning, 8 refugees had unfortunately lost their lives.
Which communities are fighting each other? Can you be specific? Because we know Kakuma has every community from Africa.
I'll just say that so far we're talking about around 5 different communities. I will not want to really go into details. But what we are doing today, even as I speak to you, there's a high delegation that went down there to talk to refugee leaders and also talk to the government so that at least you can promote peaceful coexistence among the refugees.
Is this the first time that you are seeing this kind of escalation among different communities in Africa fighting each other in this refugee camp?
Tensions have been there once in a while, like in any situation where people live together, not only in refugee camps, but everywhere in the world. At times you witness some sort of tensions, but the way we look at it also is because of congestion. I mean, there are many, many, many refugees now in Kakuma, more than 178,000 refugees in Kakuma from different communities. So we have a feeling that, I mean, there's need for us to work on decongesting the camps. This is not something that we've witnessed of late. It's something that is a development that we've not witnessed before.
We are getting reports that this latest escalation is between South Sudanese communities and communities from the Great Lakes region, Rwanda and Burundi. Can you confirm that?
I will say that yes, it is true that we've had problems with communities from Southern Sudan and also communities from the Great Lakes region. The conflict really has been around that area, but we are informing all the refugees from all the different communities that they have to obey the land, the law of the land, and also they have to promote peaceful coexistence among themselves.
And what was the cause of this escalation? We understand the first one was between two South Sudanese communities over an alleged case of a rape. What happened among the communities of Great Lakes and South Sudanese?
Yeah, like I said, that tension between the different communities, we talk about resources, but then this specifically was an accident that occurred. And one of the communities thought that it was something that was intentional. But I mean, what we are hearing, that it was just one, I mean, the investigations are going on. But our feeling was just that maybe it was just an accident. But then people, there's a misconception that it was people ganging up against other communities.
What kind of accident are we talking about here?
It was a motorbike, taxi motorbike accident where one child was knocked, and then the other communities thought that maybe it was part of the whole problem conflict.
And this child in particular was from which community? Great Lakes or South Sudanese community?
One of the communities.
That's Emmanuel Nyabera, spokesman for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees in Kenya. He was speaking to me earlier today from Nairobi.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, residents of Meridi say they can no longer afford the prices in the market. Stay tuned.
South Sudan In Focus listeners can find us on the following shortwave frequencies: 11900, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan In Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
would you migrate from where you live if you had the chance or the choice?
Yes, I would, because I feel the more you visit other places and your eyes are open, the more you're exposed to the world and the more you have a bigger understanding of how things work in the world.
If I'm really satisfied with what my community can give for me, like if I'm stable by probably the income that I get, then I don't need to migrate. I cannot migrate if my livelihood is okay in where I live.
I already migrated, meaning I'm here in Cameroon. I came from the Philippines a long time ago, because I had to do something here, yeah. I work as a volunteer, at the same time I also work because I have to feed myself.
To live? No, I'm happy here. I be near my family, near my friends, near everybody I love.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Residents of Western Equatoria State's Meridi County are complaining about price hikes of basic consumer goods. Traders say they have increased prices to meet high transportation costs due in large part to impassable roads. Western Equatoria State officials say they are working to repair the Yei Meridi Road to make it easier for traders to bring in goods. Charlton Doki returned to Juba from Meridi recently and has this report.
Residents say prices of several consumer goods have risen by more than 50% over the past month. For example, the price of wheat flour has risen from 12 to 25 South Sudanese pounds, leading to a sharp increase in the price of bread. A bar of soap, which used to cost 4 South Sudanese pounds a few days ago, now costs 6 South Sudanese pounds. Aisha Abdu, a housewife in Maridi's Maringdo area, says she now buys a 3-litre container of cooking oil at 35 South Sudanese pounds. It used to cost 25 South Sudanese pounds just a few weeks ago. She says the money her husband gives her each day to prepare meals is no longer enough to provide both lunch and supper for her family of four. She says a few months ago, the same amount of money would have been sufficient.
These high prices affect mostly us, the women. The money our husbands give us is not enough to buy food. I may complain to the head of the family, but even if I do, the money he has given me is what he can afford. Sometimes I go to the market and find that everything is expensive, and I find that the money my husband has given me is enough to cook only lunch, but not supper.
Traders attribute the increase in commodity prices to bad roads in the area, which leads to an increase in transportation costs. Abau Malish sells food and clothes in Maridi's Sukwatwat market. She says it's expensive to hire trucks to transport goods from the Ugandan capital Kampala to Maridi due to the bad condition of the Yei Maridi road.
We now hire trucks to transport our goods from Kampala to Maridi at 9 million Ugandan shillings. We used to hire trucks at 7.5 million shillings. Nowadays, it is difficult to even find truck drivers willing to transport our goods to Maridi due to the bad roads. Sometimes one spends a whole month in Kampala trying to find a truck to bring goods to Maridi.
And Malish says because of the delays, certain vegetables rot on the way. She says the high exchange rate of dollars against the local currency doesn't help either. It makes it harder for traders like her to import goods from neighboring Uganda.
The dollar is expensive. I buy $100 here at 540 South Sudanese pounds. In Kampala, I sell $100 at 26 Ugandan shillings, which is not favorable. This is why I have to increase prices.
Baraka Moses sells footwear in Maridi's Sukwatwat market. He agrees the high exchange rate of dollars contributed to steep price hikes. He says the county authority is imposing high taxes on traders and demanding fees from traders to repair the roads, all of which drives up prices.
Let me give an example.
For example, when you come with your vehicles and you reach the county, you find that the money the government is taking from you is just too much. And it forces you to make some recalculations and increase some of the prices of your goods. So if there is a way out, let the government do something about it. We need cooperation from the government.
Maridi County Chamber of Commerce officials say they are working to repair the roads to reduce transportation costs and in turn lower commodity prices. Beneth Kamis is the head of the Chamber of Commerce.
The truth is that prices of goods and services are rising because the road is not good, and that's why we've been trying to work on the construction of the road, so that at least when vehicles are able to move, prices of goods and services can reduce. But last time we checked with the people working on the construction of the road, some of their equipment was broken and they have been waiting for spare parts to arrive.
Because of the poor road conditions, dozens of loaded trucks have overturned along the Maridi Yei Road, further blocking the movement of other trucks along the same road. Kamis says the Chamber of Commerce is working to pull the overturned trucks off the road. He says once the roads are fixed, goods should be pouring into Maridi's markets and prices should drop. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. Liberian officials and the World Health Organization say the number of new Ebola cases in Liberia appears to be falling, but that it's too soon to be sure. Liberia has been the hardest hit by this regional epidemic, with approximately half the total cases and deaths. Ebola has killed at least 2,413 people in Liberia since April. Some experts have suggested it could kill tens of thousands more by year's end. However, health authorities there say that over the past 2 weeks, the rate of infection appears to be dropping slowly. The WHO says it is cautiously optimistic. Arab news channels are reporting heavy fighting in the center of Benghazi between forces loyal to the Libyan army and the Shura Council Islamist militias. The army has called on residents to evacuate amid heavy shelling. Pitched battles were reported in Benghazi's central commercial district of Sabari as Libyan army forces tried to dislodge Islamic militants in control of the area. Libyan television reported that the Red Crescent evacuated its headquarters in a local hospital due to the heavy fighting. A Libyan army spokesman claimed that 95% of Benghazi was under the control of Libyan army units, but he has made the same claim several times in the past week. He admitted, however, that heavy fighting was continuing and that Islamic fighters still control some areas. And finally, pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine say the acting prime ministers of the so-called Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics have won elections that Kiev and the West have made clear they will not recognize. The separatists held elections yesterday for leadership and legislative bodies in those parts of the Luhansk and Donetsk regions they control. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
And that is that headline news by Carol brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. Lucy, I must say thank you for joining me in Studio 13.
Thanks for having me.
We are leaving you with the song Roho Yangu Ikuimbie by Solomon Mukubwa.
Listening to Solomon Mukubwa with the song Roho Yangu Ikuimbie. I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
And I'm John Tanza, also in Washington. Thanks for being here. Please join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.